Welcome to Why Golf? Opinion Matters. This is the podcast where we celebrate everything about the sport with the great and the good of the golfing world, from the seasoned pros to those who have only just discovered their passion for the game. For those of you who haven't heard about Why Golf before, it's the place to go to find out why golf has such wide-ranging benefits for all of us. Whether you're an individual, a company, or federation, this platform is literally for everyone. If you want to check out everything we have to offer, just head to thisiswhygolf.com, which has been created to explain and explore why golf is so beneficial and quite simply one of the greatest sports on the planet. This episode, we're chatting to one of the world's biggest movie stars, which is exciting. You'll recognise Jamie Dornan from the roles in global blockbusters such as the 50 Shades trilogy and more recently Belfast, which was absolutely brilliant, as well as TV appearances in The Incredible, The Fall and Once Upon a Time. He's also dabbled in music, last year launched his own menswear brand called 1111 and is a model too. In 2006, GQ even labelled Jamie as the male Kate Moss. He's also been playing golf for years and once eagled the 18th on the old course at St Andrews. That was back in 2015 at the Dunhill Links Championship. I'm sure we'll get a lot of tips from Jamie. Jamie, great to see you. Thank you for being on our podcast.
Thank you for having me. I don't think I have any good tips.
Have you got nothing? No tips?
I mean, like practical like tips? I mean, I think I'm at a stage now after a long time playing golf of just like, you've just got to try to enjoy it. And if enjoying it, you know, if you're competitive, I'm a very competitive person, but I put too much on that of like needing to score well or feel like I'm needing to play well. And actually acceptance is a big thing in golf, isn't it? I would tell other people to just be at a point where there's an acceptance that you're not Rory. And you're off going to go out and stiff it to, you know, 12 feet, you know, with every approach shot. And you're not going to bang it 320 yards in the middle every time. That acceptance is hard to embrace. But I'm trying to do that. I think it's frustrating if you have good golf in you, which a lot of us have, and that consistency thing we're all choosing. But, you know, sometimes I can hit great big Tonker drives and leave myself a putt native to St Andrews to hold an eagle and that one time it comes off. And when you know you have those like moments in you, you're always chasing those. And sometimes I wish that actually I was more the guy who often older people who play golf, the older men or women that you see at clubs where they have a funny little swing, but they hit it straight and they don't hit it very far, but it goes straight. And I actually wish that I sort of didn't have those big drives in me or those like sort of when they come off some jazzy looking golf shots in me, because they're so rare that they come off. And actually I was just able to go up and just dink it, you know, 200 yards up the fairway left the tee. And then I kind of would love that. And there's no show, there's no flair in that kind of golf, but you'd score better.
100%. It's like patting it down the fairway, isn't it? And when you play against an opponent who does that, it's so irritating. It gets in your head because you're thinking, I just want to, you know, smash this one. And as you say, 300 yards, and it feels amazing. But then those players who do pat it down the fairway, their golf is pretty consistent.
Always, always. And it's, you know, it's that thing you're chasing. And sometimes I feel, yeah, I just need to accept that I'm, for whatever reason, not going to get consistent. It's a time thing as well, isn't it? I mean, Jesus, it's so hard to, you know, play good golf if you're not playing a lot of golf. Although you were saying the other day that you went out and not playing a lot of golf and played well. So, and that happened. I think that's freaky and that it's lucky. And I think usually if you haven't been playing a lot and your coordination is slightly off and your rhythm's off because you haven't played, then chances are you're not going to play pretty good golf.
No, it's very fluky if you do. But I before we really get into things, the shirt, thank you. You've made such an effort. It's gorgeous. Where's that from? It's got little golfers on it.
I don't even know where it's from, but I tell you what, I bought it specifically for my wife and I had a joint 40th last year. We did a big party at our house where we used to live in the Cotswolds, and we did a big party in our house before we sold the house. And I don't know why I'd be wearing a golf shirt on my 40th. I felt that that was the right thing. So I bought it specifically for that. And then I'm in Dublin filming at the moment. And I realized I packed it. And I sort of had no idea why I packed it. I never, you know, it was a year ago that I wore it. So it's my birthday next week. But then I thought, well, this is great. I can wear it because we're talking golf. So it's all worked out well.
It's as if it's meant to be. I'm delighted that the golf shirt has made an appearance on my golf. Let's go back to the 18th and when you did make that eagle back in 2015, playing with Peter Uihlein. And I watched the footage this morning and you looked so, well, you were in shock, but also delight and ecstasy. What was that feeling like on 18 back then?
You know, I played a decent level of a few sports. A very sporty childhood, achieved not amazing things, but like did all right in them. But I think it felt like my sort of greatest sporting achievement. I think it was the fact that it was towards, you know, it was on the most famous, arguably the most famous hole in world golf. I had my mate Mike on the bag that week. I've sort of clamped down on that a wee bit, the Dunhill, but used to. I mean, I haven't actually played Dublin since 2017 because of schedule. I'd seem to always be filming around that time now. It's sort of torture. But I have my one of my best friends in the world, Mike Rogers, on the bag. And I sort of asked if I could do that. And I don't think they allow that anymore, which is fair enough. But it was extra special because he was there. And, you know, the grandstand's up and it was full. And Sky Sports are there. They're filming you. And it was one of those ones where it's a very inviting tee shot. There's something about that. And I hit the Russex the next year, I think. And I didn't get the sort of lucky bounce that the old person gets back into play. But I don't know. I just hit a really, really good drive and went over 300 yards, runs there, you know, ran up. And I thought, God, that might be up near the green. It was sort of right at it, you know, where the flag was. Really hit that well. Anyway, and I played okay that day. I was in a decent groove, I guess. And then I got up, I played with Peter Uihlein as my pro, but Steve Redgrave was playing in that group as well. And he had an old caddy. He has all the Dunhills, local St. Andrews caddy. And it was quite clearly a big swinging right to left putt. I was in that sort of valley of sin. Yeah. And he said, oh, there's a lot of movement right to left there. And I was like, okay. I mean, I know. He wasn't very specific. He wasn't like, oh, it's like, you know, you're at that far post. It's just, it's a big swinger right to left. I went, yeah, no. I got back, yeah. And I did just try to, it's one of those ones, just get down in two and get a birdie on the 18th. And I hit it. And it was steamy. Like, if you watched it this morning, it'll be, you'll like, if it hadn't hit the hole, it was probably 10 feet by. And I probably wouldn't have fancied myself holding a birdie. But it was just one of those ones that just hit it, dropped. And I was shocked. I was like, it was a real sort of moment of like, what a time to do it, you know, with my mate. And lots of people watching and Sky Sports cameras watching.
Heaven, just brilliant. Yeah, it's those moments though, isn't it, in golf that we cherish and we love and we look back on, you know, making memories on the golf course, isn't it, which is what the game's all about.
Yeah, like I'm always trying to explain to people, I've said this before to people, that I feel like I spend my life sort of defending golf to people. Like I grew up in a sort of golf environment and a sort of, you know, I don't consider golf to be like an elite sport, but I understand in many realms and in many places it is. And I do understand that there's a side of golf that I don't like. And there's a sort of laser wearing old guard, this has to be tucked in, that I think is negative about golf and that we need to sort of move away from, or try to make golf more accessible, cooler, younger and fresher. I'm all for that. So I spend a lot of time wherever I am in the world, sit beside someone at dinner and they're like, golf, really? And you're like, all that negativity, that all the things I'm talking about there, the negative connotations around the sport, they're valid. They are valid. And you're always I always try to bring it down to the simplest form of like, there's lots of clubs where it's not like that, right? There's lots of accessible clubs where also you don't pay those fees to join and whatever. It is an accessible sport. Even if it's just going to driving range and whacking balls. The thing about actual golf and playing game of golf, for me, it's not just the social side of it, like getting drunk with the people you've been with, whatever. It's not even just an alcohol thing. It's a thing of like, which is good, a good fun part of it. If you are that way inclined and you're on a golf trip, it's great. But it's a thing of like, you're with friends, you're walking around, mm-hmm. often somewhere very pretty, often by, you know, if you're lucky enough, you're you know, you're surrounded by greenery. That's usually a given. You're by a coastline where there's beautiful woods. People talk. I think you get the most out of conversations when you're walking. You know, I think more interviews should be done on the move, because you're up and you're freer and you I don't know, it's like it clears your mind or something. So then you're going for a big walk with, you know, people you care about and having these great chats. Like in the simplest form, yes, in the middle of it, you're playing a competitive person. Like a lot of people are, a lot of people like to not admit that they're really competitive. And you play this really mind-bending game in the middle of it that is a game of real skill and mental agility. And what's not to like about it? You know, it's not too strenuous, you know, unless you're got yourself pretty bang on the shape. Like, you know, you're just walking and it takes a long time. I'm trying to, you know, but for me, it's just like a no-brainer of like a great thing to do that is good for your mind and good for your soul.
Totally. I think you've summed it up really, really well. We've spoken to quite a few guests who have said exactly the same thing. It's about bringing people together, isn't it? That community that you feel, and physical exercise, you know, the mental exercise as well, and how good it is for our health mentally and physically. I just want to mention, because I saw some really funny clips last night. I have been watching you on YouTube a little bit, which is sounds a bit odd. But there was one really funny clip about you talking about you walking. And in golf, we walk a lot, don't we? We walk down the fairways. And I remember speaking to Colin Montgomery quite a few times. His psychologist has said, you know, you've got to walk tall down that fairway. You own it and breathe in the fresh air, enjoy yourself. But didn't one director tell you, Jamie, that he sort of wondered about your walk? What was that about?
Yeah, said that I did it. I sort of walked. It was in the fall, actually. First series of the fall, which is, 11 years ago now. I was walking. I thought I wasn't giving it much thought, to be honest with you. And then he sort of said, is that like a character thing you're doing, the walk there? And I was like, no, it's not. It's just me walking, really. He sort of suggested that maybe I take sort of longer strides, was what he suggested. And I was in my head about it for a long time.
Was it?
Yeah, I'm in and out of my head about it. We all have insecurities, and I have many. But weirdly, at the moment, this might trigger it back. At the moment, I'm a bit like, well, look, it's got me this far.
Yes.
It works.
It's a good walk.
I don't really have back pain. I'm a good runner. I'm fit. My walk's obviously, it's all right. Like
it's great.
You know, I'm getting from A to B.
Oh, totally. It's very subjective, the way people see you walk. But no, it was hilarious how you explained that you were walking a bit too much on your tiptoes and you tried to walk more on your heels.
Yeah, and I think it's a hereditary thing. You know, our kids, we have three girls, and particularly number one and number three are real tiptoers, you know.
Yeah.
Particularly our youngest. She's just everywhere in her tiptoes.
Really?
And she's four now, and she's still, you know, I don't think her heels have ever touched the ground, you know.
Heel first. What about your golf swing when you're over the ball? Where's your weight? What do you think about it at all?
Depends what happened on the shot before. I don't know. I mean, like, I if I'm chipping these days, I think my right heel is up off the ground because I'm trying to give myself a better sort of attack angle there.
Okay.
But, you know, it's very sort of YouTube golf I'm playing or something.
Oh, well, I want to talk about your simulator in just a moment, but I'm thinking about you growing up in Northern Ireland, which you mentioned, and we had Padraig Harrington on for an episode,
yeah.
And he was talking about, you know, the glorious landscape there. You were surrounded by golf growing up. Was it inevitable that you were going to play?
I think maybe with the sort of where I grew up right to the Royal Belfast Golf Club, which I've been a member of for 30 years. I'm from Hollywood, same place as Rory, and Hollywood Golf Club, two golf clubs in Hollywood. There's Royal Belfast, there's Hollywood. But around it, all of Ireland's like that. You know, it is one giant golf course almost, you know. And it's accessible in Ireland. You know, anyone can go play golf. You know, there's clubs where it costs more, and there's clubs that are maybe harder to get into, or we're sort of a bit fustier. Lots to the contrary of that. So it felt like, just geography wise, and the sort of school that I went to, and other guys around me doing it, and the sort of influence of Irish golfers, you know, Eamonn Darcy to O'Connor Jr. to Darrell Clark to Paul McGinley to Harrington, all these like great Irish golfers from, you know, small place. We seem to have produced a lot of great talent. Maybe arguably the most talented of this generation we were raised. So it felt like a sport that was like there, that was so tangible that you could grasp at. I sort of wish I'd started it earlier. It wasn't my sort of summer activity really when I started playing a little bit, like sort of 11 or 12, but didn't really take it up properly until I was 17 maybe. And then I didn't play at all in my 20s. I moved to London at 20, and then just, London's hard. You know, it's hard to play golf. Like, I was living in like Hackney. There wasn't a lot of golf around there.
Yeah.
So I really, my 20s, didn't really play much at all. And then in my 30s, took it up again properly, and then it become sort of mildly obsessed with it. And I love that it'll always, hopefully, body willing and everything else willing, it'll always be around, you know. And there's no other sport, like, it's really not, you know, there's other sports that have very low impact on the body, like darts or something, but in terms of sports that, like, get you outside, that you can be uber competitive with, because of the whole system of the handicap system, of it, you know, you can be competitive up until you're in your 90s, you know. I mean, name me another sport that you can do that, you know. And I love that you can travel all kinds of parts of the world, and there's golf there, and it's unlike the other jobs that you've known of when you grew up, and it feels different and smells different. And it's, yeah, I do love it. I watch so much of it. Yeah, I'm obsessively, in tournaments that I'm not watching, I'm on that DP World Tour app constantly.
Are you?
Yeah, constantly. Yeah, I really am.
Oh, that's amazing. And you mentioned Rory. Do you follow him avidly? I mean, do you chat with him at all?
Yeah, right. Craig Rory is a good friend. I love the guy. I think he's brilliant. I think he's an unbelievable ambassador for the game, unbelievable ambassador for the part of the world that we're both from. And people got maybe a bit carried away, I think, you know, the hyperbole of like he saved golf last year. But look, it was very impressive the burden that he took upon himself last year with, you know, flying the flag for the PGA Tour and DP World Tour, I guess, against the whole LIV thing, and continues to do so, and to play the golf that he made last year, get himself back to number one in the world. It was nothing short of miraculous, truly, you know. And I think, sadly, there's been a little bit of fatigue that came. It took a little while to come, but it's maybe come there. Maybe not at the best time, just before the major season got underway. But I think we're about to see a big bounce back from him. I think he's going to win the Open. I really do. And then I think Augusta will become something else that's more sort of change how Augusta looks to him, I guess, if he gets another major. But I love the guy. I think he's, you know, there's a reason why I think people in your game, in the punditry game, in other players, everyone, he's sort of judged differently, because anyone who knows a bit about golf knows that it's this sort of bit of a different grade for Rory. And
yeah,
everyone's playing the best golf who wins. Everyone says Rory, all the commentators say Rory, all the past players say Rory, you know. That's not trying to undermine John Rahm or anything here, you know, or Scottie Scheffler or anyone else who's up there. But he, when he's on form, there's really nothing like it. And yeah, I think we all, not just people who know him personally, but just everyone wants him to be on form all the time, because it's good for the game. It's very exciting to watch. But I have to say, like, similar to the way the American audience is, what they lose, particularly in his prime, but even more recently, if Tiger doesn't make the cut, they lose like 70% of their audience or something like that. It's an insane figure. Someone told me, I'm a bit like that with Rory. I have to say, it's not like I can't get excited watching other players, but you know, let's take the Masters. The shine was off the Masters for me a little bit after Rory didn't make the weekend, and I wanted John Rahm to win. Delighted he won, and he deserves to win, and deserves to win loads more majors. But I had to sort of pick myself back up and go, right, come on, you can enjoy it just because it's not Rory going to be on the weekend or contending. But yeah, he's a big part of it for me.
Oh, that's so funny. Come on, Jamie, you can enjoy this. Just you can watch other golfers.
Well, what was nice this year is we were here. I was already in Ireland for the Masters and start filming. And my wife, my kids were here, and my sister and her family were here from the north. They're driven down. And we sort of rented this lovely house in Wicklow. And my sister and her husband wouldn't watch any golf, really. And I sort of, my wife likes watching, Millie likes watching the Masters because it's so pretty. And I always make her put a little cheeky bet on. And I actually talked her out of putting the each way bet on Phil Mickelson this year.
Oh.
She's always bet on Phil. We've been together nearly 14 years. She's always bet on Phil. And I've always at the Masters because it's a pretty safe bet. You know, he always shows up there. But I was like, look, he's nowhere near any form. Hardly gets to play any golf. He's been missing cuts there. There aren't any cuts there. He's been not playing well there. I said, I wouldn't bother him. And of course, he goes and does that on Sunday. She would have made pretty good money. Anyway.
Oh, Millie.
But I know, it was my fault, really.
She shouldn't have listened to you.
But yeah, my sister and her husband got really into watching the Masters this year. And actually, their enthusiasm sort of carried me out of my Rory missing cut funk.
Oh, that's great. And you've got three girls. And do you ever take them to the driving range? Or do they ever show any kind of interest? Because you've got your simulator at home that you installed just before COVID.
Not anymore because we've moved.
So are you missing your simulator?
Yeah, the guy who I sold the house to, they bought the simulator off me. It's a real sore point. Suffered immeasurably since.
So I brought up the simulator. I brought up you walking. You're going to need therapy after this, Jamie.
Need to go for a walk after this. I reckon when you have a simulator at home, you play better golf. You just do because you're hitting balls all the time. I used to call it the world's most expensive punch bag. And that's what it felt like. You know, sometimes it was that. It was like a release. I'd just go down and I'd put it on range mode or whatever. And I'd just like whack golf balls to like get something out of my system. And actually, sometimes I'd be trying to finesse stuff or play, just trying to have fun and have friends in there and have a drink and play St. Andrews or whatever courses on the simulator. So it was all about just hitting that many golf balls. Your game is in better shape. And I'm already a year, not quite, but 9 months since we moved. And I don't have
it. It's like a breakup, isn't it? It's like you've broken up with your simulator. I feel like we need to dig deep with this and, you know, get to the root.
The guy I sold it to, I was like, he said, oh, I'll buy the simulator. I was like, great. I said, do you play golf? And he goes, not really.
Oh, that makes it worse. Makes it worse, the fact that he just doesn't play golf. Oh, because I know how obsessed you were because, on your Instagram, you did the loop-de-loop 5-iron challenge. And I know you're a real student of the game. And I love the preciseness of you put 234.27 yards. I'm pretty sure it was that. I love that.
Yeah, well, that's a good hit with a 5-iron that you've done some funky swing with. And also, I just thought it was in COVID, I was so bored. And I thought if anyone else puts there, that 0.4 or whatever could be defective. It was my thinking. But nobody took up the challenge, by the way. So.
Nobody took, but so many people watched it, though.
Yeah, maybe watched it, but like, you know, I tried to tag guys I know when we play on the tour. I've tagged Rory and Shane Lowry and guys that I know and get on very well. But no one really took it up.
Oh, we will not ignore you, Jamie. If you tag us, we'll definitely follow. Definitely. We will be back with Jamie Dornan in just a second. But on Why Golf Opinion Matters, we speak to fascinating people every single fortnight to find out why they love the sport so much. Our last guest was Olympic silver medalist and niece to the king, Zara Tyndall, who has hopes for family golf days in the future alongside her children.
It would be great if they all knew how to swing a club and you can do it together because that's what you kind of live for, isn't it? And making those moments together can all be interested in the same things. That's incredible.
She gave us an insight into husband Mike's golfing wardrobe.
There's definitely a golfing cupboard that there's a lot of that fits in. I would say he probably spends more time deciding what golfer outfit he's going to wear than what suit he would wear to an occasion.
Anne says she's never fazed if she ends up in the sand.
I do quite like the bunker shot. Either like it's a challenging shot, isn't it? I do quite like doing the bunker shot.
Make sure you go back and listen if you haven't already, and hit subscribe on your favourite podcast provider for a new episode of Why Golf Opinion Matters every 2 weeks. Now, back to our chat with Jamie. So you're filming at the moment. What are you filming? Can you tell us?
Yeah, I did a series called Tourist for BBC that we shot in Australia, the first series, and we're only ever meant to make one of them. And it was, This is a not so humble brag, it was the most watched drama in the UK last year. So suddenly they were like, well, let's make another. Do you want to make another? And I said, well, I was like, yeah, but I wasn't really willing to take my family the whole way. They were out for 5 months in Australia and I weren't ready to take on a trip like that again. So if there's a way of shooting it closer to home, so here we are, and I'm in Dublin. So,
brilliant.
That's nice.
I watched it. It was absolutely amazing. I look forward to watching what you're filming right now. And do you have any time to play golf at the moment? This is your afternoon off and you're talking about golf.
I know. I'm going to try to get to the range tonight because I am actually managing to go out and play tomorrow. I'm playing. I sort of got a half day and I'm trying to get down to Adair Manor, which is... I was going to say maybe the last time I saw you was at Adair.
It was at the JP McManus event,
Yeah. So I'm going to get out there with Brian O'Driscoll, who I'm sure you know, who I play a fair bit of golf with. So I need to get to the range tonight. But it's tough when you're filming. It's hard. A great benefit of Ireland, many great benefits of this race, I will say. But a great benefit is we get longer evenings than you would even in the UK, because more northerly, and we, it'll stay light till after 10 here. So
amazing.
And I'm here for a long time. So as those nights and evenings get longer, I'm hoping for, often we finish at 6 o'clock. I finish work. Yeah, I start horrifically early, but I finish by six. I could be teeing off 6:30 because there's my mate's a member of a place near where we're filming. And I could get 18 holes in of an evening. So I'm looking forward to those evenings. Which are not too far away.
Oh, that's so great. And do you take your clubs with you?
I take them everywhere. Yeah, they're literally sat there. You can't see they're just behind me.
Yeah, I just love the fact you've worn your golf shirt as well. I mean, I've worn green because of, Ireland. Come on.
I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, great. I love everyone from Ireland and the North as well. Oh, also, I've been asked to ask you about the first tee at Sunningdale. Can you elaborate a little bit about the first tee at Sunningdale? A close friend of yours has said.
Have you been talking to Tim Hedlund?
He was one of them. There was someone else as well.
Terry Crawley?
Possibly.
Steve Martin?
Definitely.
Why would Steve bring up, why would Steve throw me up? Edmund and Crowley, I don't know them well enough, so I don't care with them. Throw me under the bus, but Steve didn't. Yeah, I tell you what, that was the first time I ever played Sunningdale, and it being one of those things where I sort of nearly played it a few times or whatever, and this was just last year. And I got invited to play, or Steve, I did something nice for Tim Hedlund. I did a thing, I made a video for a thing for his wife, and he said, thank you for doing that. And I know Tim, I've met him a few times just through the Dunhill.
Yeah, he's a great golfer as well.
He's a very classy golfer.
Yeah, very steady.
Yeah, he said, look, if you do this thing for me, I'll take you up. So I think that's a great, and I was playing with Steve, who's one of the best mates, and then Tim and this guy, Terry Crawley, had not met. Anyway, Tim.
What did you do on the first at Sunningdale?
Well, the first was the least of my problems. Tim, that is very competitive and he's very cheeky, I would say. And he won't believe, because it's the only time I played with him. We played near each other at Dunhill, but it's the only time I played with him. And I fully... And the only time in my life I had the shanks, but full on shanks. I'm not talking. I maybe have the other round where I have a shank out of nowhere, but I had the shank. I almost didn't even know it was a thing.
I mean, even the word.
I know, and you get people saying don't say it. But I was like, I'll say it all day. I've never.
I've got it.
I literally had it. I couldn't do anything. If I took the club away here, if I took them here, if I did, nothing, I couldn't play golf. First time out at Sunningdale. And it was like hell. It was genuine.
Yeah, well, Jamie, I'm sure a lot of people listening can relate to it, though. When you go out and you have so many expectations and you have to put them all to one side. But when you when you literally can't hit the golf ball,
honestly, barely making the cut of the golf ball. It was incredible. And now and again, somewhere happened, I'd hit a good shot and Tim would go like,
okay.
He was my partner and he'd be like, why don't you just do that every time? Where's that been? And I was like, I can't, I'm not... And I don't know what's happening here. I'm having some kind of physical breakdown. It was awful. But on the first, I hit sort of high hook thing that Tim was saying they're going to put a plaque where it might probably end up because he's never seen anyone over there before. It was an atrocious shot, but it wasn't one of the worst of the day. That's
right.
It.
Well, if you go right on the first, you're going to hit the road if you go too far right.
So yeah, I was in play. If we're going to take positives from it.
Okay.
It was a bad day.
Tell us your strengths. And also, you know, you'll have a round like that, but what brings you back to the game? It's those few shots that you connect with, isn't it?
I honestly couldn't put the club head anywhere near the ball for 4.5 hours. And that was on a Tuesday. I think on either the Thursday or the Friday, I went and played what was my old home course. When we were living in the Cotswolds at Minchinhampton Golf Club, it's called, and I shot like 78 or something.
Oh, wow.
2 days later, and I text Tim Edward that was like, it's just 78. And he was like, well, I don't have to lean it.
Did he believe you?
No. He was like, no. It's not a helpful thing even to lie about in a way.
No.
Lying to yourself. I really did go out and shoot. It's like all of us can relate to this. Like some days you have a swing, it's just there and your rhythm's there and you're not fighting it. You're not snatching at it. You're not, you know, often those days are your sunny days. I'm going to be honest, like it's fair weather stuff. It's like you're in Portugal, you know, you go to the beach after to meet your wife and your mate's wife or whatever. And you know, you're going to have a few beers. Like sometimes there's good stuff surrounding it that just puts you at ease. It's often Portugal, often like you're golfing Portugal. the times I've shot in the 70s, which I probably only, I could count on just about two hands, probably the rounds I've shot in the 70s. Again, which is why I shouldn't be up 8 or 8.5, you know, 9. It doesn't happen enough. But in those rounds, just relaxed. Is you relaxed, you know,
yes.
And you're not, the last thing you're thinking about is a swing. You're just thinking of like turning and you, trusting that your hands are going to be in a good position there, and then all you have to do there is uncoil. I mean, that essentially, you play your best job, and the pros are like that too. They're not thinking of, oh, I better keep my right hand outside my left on the way back, and better not have a gap here. They're not, none of those technical things go over their head. And I think even on an amateur level or sort of hacker's level, whatever way you want to call it, it's the same thing. If any time you're fighting your game and you're going, well, God, I remember that day I played well and I was just thinking this. And I'm doing a thing where I short at the end, my swing's shorter. I was doing a half swing at work. And then you're just like trying to find it in the golf course and then you're done.
Yeah, you are so done, aren't you? Yeah. But I think that's like, it's the sort of philosophy for life, isn't it? The more we let go and we allow, and the more you're kind of in flow, as you say, the pros always talk about being in flow and not thinking about anything when they're winning golf tournaments. But it's when it becomes really technical and overthinky that you lose your game. But it's a bit, I suppose, I'm trying to relate it to like acting and, you know, scenes that you're in, which are pretty pressurized because you've got, you know, camera crews around you, it's costing a lot of money to film something and the pressure's on you to perform to a certain level. When are you able to let go and, you know, your talent shine through?
Well, the thing is, I think there's loads of parallels to that, but it's that thing of like my job and with a professional golfer's job.
Mm.
If you've done all the work previous, if you're super prepared, then you should be able to just go out and have fun. You know, and that's essentially what it is. Like, I never turn up to set going, oh, God, how is it I conjure up, like emotion there?
You know,
what is it I do to, like, maybe cry? Or, like, what was I draw on from life experience? And And yeah, dear God, down on my life. I mean, don't think anyone realized. You've done all that. That's all done. Yeah. That's work. You've done all that work so that hopefully when I step on set, I feel totally free and unencumbered with thought so that when someone's saying something to me, I can truthfully answer it like I'm hearing it for the first time. Like that's where you want to get to. I think, you know, men and women, when they're in their peak, you know, they're not thinking about anything other than going out playing good golf.
Yeah.
They know that they've done the work. It's the same thing. And but it's mad. The madness of it, like, you know, I find just like someone could say something to you, standing over a pot and you haven't been playing well all day, and then you've been missing everything inside 5 feet, and then someone will say, just tell yourself, I'm a great putter. Just stop that in your head. Just stand over that thinking, I'm a great putter. I'm a great putter. I'm a great putter. And it'll work. Yeah. And then weirdly, it doesn't work in the next hole.
I know. But those little nuggets sometimes, it's bizarre how our brains work and how they operate. I mean, I played last week, and as I mentioned to you, I played really well because, I don't know, I got into my head, oh, I've not played for ages. There's no expectation. I could be rubbish or I could be good. And actually, things really flowed. But I'd seen a friend of mine and I'd seen his golf swing the week before. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're so slow with your backswing, with taking the club away. And that's where I'm really quick. So all I had in my head was just, die, just go slow, slower than you usually do on your backswing. And that is the one thought I had for the whole round. And I played really well.
You can keep it concise like that. If you can have one thought, that's good. I remember Justin Rose telling me that you cannot take it back too slow. There's no such thing as too slow.
Well, there's your tip. There's your tip. We found one.
Yeah, and it's all very well if you're taking it slow, but if you're taking it and the club heads get behind the hands, like how slow it is, it's not. If you're still get yourself in that, where the only way out is to swing the arms up. And that's my real fault, is that I get the club stuck behind me really badly on the way back. No matter, my rehearsal is very shuffle-like or very JT-like, where, you know, very deliberate. And then, I'll record myself at the, or my mate will me about playing, or at the range, I'll set up camera and like my, put in perfect position there. And then when I pull the trigger, reality and way back there, I'm like, I end up doing the same. It's maddening.
Yeah.
And this is where I think YouTube is really dangerous, you know, and we're all going on, like we all do it. I've talked with Claude Harmon about this, about how you're like, you go on there and you get some little band-aid swing fix that, you know, and it actually worked for a few holes, but the reality is those people making those YouTube videos, and some of them are great, and there's some great characters on there, and people like that I really respect the way they talk about the game.
Mm.
They're talking so generally, and they never see you swing the golf club. And that's where it's, you know, people go, oh, well, that, you know, I'm not saying there's basic things like the grip and stuff that should benefit everyone. But I'm a big believer in you know, whoever's coaching you and instructing you, they really need to see you rather than you going on YouTube going, oh, well, that looks like it's working for him. We're all built different. Our physicality is so different.
Yes.
It's so different. You know, we all move differently. Oh, we've had injuries or the age we're at, whatever it is, we all move differently. So what works on a sort of general level on a YouTube like tip just might not, it might be the opposite of what you need to be told, because actually naturally you're doing something that's going to, you know, it's all that sort of counter reaction and stuff, you know.
But how wonderful that we can all have different, totally different golf swings. Even, yeah. You know, they don't have to look perfect. And that's why golf is for everybody out there.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I would love an ugly golf swing. I don't care about the aesthetics of it. I don't need to look as much as I feel like I want to look like Adam Scott, Rory, Freddie Couples, Louis Oosthuizen, all Ernie Els, all the best swingers of golf clubs.
Yeah.
I don't care if I have a really robotic looking swing or an ugly looking swing, or Furyk or Couture or one of those guys who's, you know, not pretty to watch.
They speak really highly of your swing, by the way.
Oh, yeah, by the way. But like, you're like Jim Furyk and Matt Couture aren't going, I have a pretty golf swing. They know they swing it funky, you know, but they're two of the biggest earners of all time. But that's what I'm sort of getting to. Like, I don't care what it looks like. It works, and I can get the club head square on the ball every time, which I just find very hard to do.
Jamie, you've spoken about your love for golf and the fact that you watch a lot of it. The USPGA Championship is happening this week. Do you have anyone that you're behind? Well, Rory, of course. Who do you think's going to win it?
Well, I think I do actually genuinely think Rory may win it. This will either be really spot on or way off, but I think Rory might win the USBJ and the Open this year. I think he might have to. And I think it'll be one of those weird things, like when he capitulated on the last day in 2011 at the Masters. I think the miss this year might be one of those sort of blessing things that kicks him into some other place or gets him hopefully two of the three remaining majors. This is what I'm hoping for, yeah.
Oh, great. And then you'll definitely watch the weekend of the golf, won't you? Which is good. Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Thank you for your tip. Now, we like to ask our guests five clubhouse curveballs at the end. If you could be a caddy for a week, who would you caddy for and which tournament would you pick?
Oh.
And you go Rory again.
Well, it's very hard not to. Also, what vintage is it? Like, if it could be like...
It can be past and present. Anyone.
It'd be hard to not, like, you know, early 2000s Tiger. I mean,
yeah.
That would be mega to see that up close. Tiger at the Masters. Tiger at the Masters in 97, if I'm really honest, would have been pretty special. Although I'd also love to caddy rolling, like, proper characters of the game, like Lee Trevino or something, you know, or Freddie Couples, just to watch that swing all day. Yeah, probably Tiger in his pulse. Yeah, at the Masters.
Oh, I love the fact that you love the game so much, know so much about it. Okay, second one. What's your favourite golf course that you've ever played?
Oh, God. Probably Sunningdale, the old Sunningdale. I just think it's magical and he's annoying to play well there.
Not that day when you played with Tim and Steve, no.
But I'm not going to play a lot of great, but Robert Rush is magic. A definite honourable mention to Royal Belfast, where I've been a member for 30 years. And actually, someone asked me recently, if you knew you were going to die and you had one round of golf, where would you play it? And it could be Augusta, it could be somewhere you've never played, or Pebble Beach or Cypress Hill or Spyglass or any of those. And I say Royal Belfast without even thinking, because that's where I have so many memories, and I'm, you know, it's sort of lifetime memories at that place. So for me, it'd probably be there. Is it the best course I've ever played? Probably not. For nostalgia reasons and where my heart is, I'd probably say there. I mean, the old course at St Andrews is pretty spectacular, and, you know, it's, dare I say it, quite scoreable. You know, you can sort of go left quite a lot and be in play.
Yeah, great answer. You've given us a few there. Yeah, a friend of mine played it last week. I just texted, don't go right on the old course. Number three, if you could portray any golfer in a biopic movie, who would you pick?
So that I wouldn't have to put on an accent, it'd have to be Rory. I mean, we're literally exactly.
You're good at accents, though. You are good. Okay.
It's nice when you don't have to do one, and if you're from the same postcode as that person, and we've both got curly hair, so that's just easier too. They wouldn't have to do much there.
Who's more famous? Who's the more famous person to come out of Hollywood?
Oh, Rory. Rory's name is on, like, sign when you come into Hollywood, it says, like, well, Hollywood home where Rory McIlroy is. So, yeah,
does it not say and Jamie Dornan?
No, I'm not this at all there, not certainly.
Okay, we're gonna go with Rory then. Number four, if you were forced to putt the ball without a golf club, which alternative piece of sporting equipment would you use? You can go like tennis racket, snooker cue, ski pole.
Snooker would be too easy, wouldn't it?
Get down low, like,
yeah, I probably a hockey stick would probably give me the best chance.
Yeah, great. Good choice. Excellent. At number five, our final question. What's your drink of choice on the 19th hole?
Very dependent on where I am. If I'm on this island, well, it'll probably be Guinness. But then sometimes on a sunny day, you don't want to drink stout. So I probably usually just want a nice fizzy cold lager.
I love that. On a sunny day, you just don't want to drink stout.
No, you know what, you don't. It's not where your head goes. You want something just a bit zappier and colder. So probably just like a lager, yeah.
Oh, well, Zara Tyndall last week, she said champagne. She wanted something fizzy.
She's a good drinker, Zara. Where is that? But she was there the only other time I was with the top of my birthday.
Oh, great. Oh, we've also had like someone would have an Arnold Palmer as well, which is a really refreshing drink after a round of golf.
Very good.
That was, yeah, Tom Evans on one of our shows. And finally, Jamie, you've been so kind. We've loved having you on. Thank you so much. Your insight has been amazing. Your stories have been so entertaining. Could you finish off? Our final question is, why play golf, be involved in golf, be part of the golfing community?
There's probably more that you'll get out of it than you think you will. And, you know, whatever sort of predetermined ideas you have of the game and the type of people who play the game, you're probably, you know, going to be proven wrong. It gets you out and about. You can be as competitive as you like. And everyone has terrible golf in them. And there's comfort in that. So even if you're starting out and you're frustrated because it's, you know, it's not an easy sport, that you've accept that it's never going to be easy. And there's been people playing their whole lives who don't find it easy. So if you can just go and enjoy it and get all the good things out of it, like the fresh air and the sort of banter and competitiveness of it, then you're amigo, have a good time.
Listen, we love watching you in all that you do, and good luck with the series that you're filming in Dublin. You've been brilliant, really brilliant company. Thank you for joining us.
All right, thanks, Dad. See you later.
Remember, if you like what you've heard, make sure you subscribe on your favourite podcast provider, and the next episode will drop into your feed automatically. Make sure to also leave us a review too. We're also on Instagram. Just search for This Is Why Golf, and that's the best place to submit your questions for Clubhouse Curveballs, which we'll put to our next guest. To find out more of the most up-to-date insights and research, just head to thisiswhygolf.com, where there's lots more information on all the benefits that golf has to offer. We will be back on Friday, the 26th of May, to find out someone else's why golf. But until then, from me, Di Stewart, it's goodbye.